Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's topic, How to Handle Meeting Killers, Chapter 4, The Silent Plotter. Here we go. The Silent Plotter. I love it.
I don't have any doubt that people know what we're talking about, right?
Well, we've talked about several behaviors already about, you know, meeting killers, people's behaviors in meetings that are just not effective or productive at all. And the silent plotter is another one of these hideous folks that we're going to talk about today.
The sort of passive aggressive who says, oh, no, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm in the meeting. I'm paying attention. And then privately afterwards, they go and talk you down and they don't actually contribute because they don't want to say what's really true on their mind, which is they think this is dumb because they think everything is dumb because they're passive aggressive. And we're continuing the series that comes from a Wall Street Journal article. We rarely like articles that are in popular business newspapers and magazines, because they don't suggest good ideas, because they're not actionable, and because they're wildly off the mark. But this one is actually pretty good, and we're going through a series. We've done the jokester and the dominator, the naysayer. And guy, by the way, guys, these are not our terms. They're the journal's terms. And this came in the 15 May 2012 edition. It is available to subscribers and unsubscribers. At least it was for a time. It may have been long enough now that you can't get it, but we'll tell you enough, all you need to know.
And to be clear, we both read the Wall Street Journal every day.
Right? Yeah.
One of our favorite.
Yeah, that's what we do.
There's
an old saying. If I haven't said it before on the air, I'll say it now for the first time in 7 years. If it wasn't in the journal, it didn't happen. That's how the business world feels about the Wall Street Journal.
It's true. And it's true.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. The Silent Plotter. We're going to talk about, there's really two parts to each of these casts. What they do, so we can all be clear about who we're talking about. And then what we recommend you do as a manager in order to change their behavior.
Okay, so silent plotters, what do they do?
Yeah, okay, so first of all, they're quiet in meetings, which a lot of younger managers then take as, well, that person's not a problem. But of course, being silent can be, in fact, a form of passive aggressiveness. Now, I'm not going to harp on passive aggressiveness here, guys. We're not a big fan of armchair psychology. We're not even a fan of psychology. We're a fan of behavior. Silent plotters are quiet in meetings, but sometimes they're really obvious about their opposition to things through facial expressions and body language. The eye roll is the classic one, or whispering to somebody else in a tone that clearly indicates, I can't believe somebody would say that. Sometimes they use body language. Sometimes they use other disinterested behaviors to send a message that they don't want to be involved. Every once in a while, they pout, which always amazes me because it's just so unadult to pout, but people do it. There are funny emotions in the workplace. What really makes it bad is they can be silent in the meeting. Maybe they don't roll their eyes, but they don't contribute. And then after the meetings, they begin to work against you, your ideas, the work you want done, and to work against the team by definition.
Right. And that's where they become really a problem, right? The silence is bad enough when we should talk about the silent part of it, but the real killer is the activity afterwards.
Yeah. And what's interesting is, a lot of young managers, new managers, would say, well, then what I should do is worry about their behavior afterwards. No, you attack it or you address this issue both at the meeting with certain behaviors we'll talk about, and you do so after the meeting as well. And after the meeting is when they start talking with others. They tell them what they think the problems are with something else, with the new plan, with the changes in the process. There's a problem with the software that was chosen, with the decision to use HTML5 versus Flash, increased workload. You know, nobody's thinking this through. And, you know, we at Manager Tools stand by our guidance that when it comes to professional work behavior, there are two things that we recommend somebody get fired for, and that is poor performance, failing to meet their responsibilities. Again, over time, guys, we're not ones to pull the trigger very fast. And second, for tearing down the team. And if the team is supposed to be doing X, and the silent plotter is saying X on the work, X on the work, X on the work, and then all the while smiling at the boss, a lot of managers would call that passive aggressive and try to turn to HR and how do I deal with a passive aggressive person? You don't deal with their passive aggressiveness. You deal with their behavior. If it's a sin, a professional sin, if you will, pardon the phrasing, to tear down the team, and they're working against what the team's mission is, then they're tearing down the team. And I wouldn't stand for it very long. I think the shortest period of time I waited to fire someone, other than for an egregious error like hitting somebody or stealing or verbal harassment, I think was about 3.5 months. And it was somebody who was tearing down the team, and they were privately going around and telling people stories and basically bitching and moaning. I'd given him probably 30 bits of feedback over the course of 2 months. And I said, you know, I'm going to give you 3 or 4 more weeks. And if this continues, I'm going to fire you, because I don't care what kind of performance you have. I'm willing to work with you, and I want you to change your behavior. And I think you've got a lot of skills, and I won't stand for one or more anybody on this team working against what the team has to do, because we're all terribly busy. And she didn't change at all. And I terminated her, and she sued, and we won. In fact, we won in like a case dismissed before it went to trial. So regardless of whether they engage in behavior in the meeting, in terms of being disrespectful to the process, don't worry about them being disrespectful to you. We don't want to show us thin skin. Or whether they do something after the meeting, both of those sets of behaviors are unprofessional, and we recommend you give them feedback.
Good. Okay. So let's now talk about the how we change behavior, and also when we change the behavior. When we do that?
Yeah. Silent plotters are a lot like naysayers in reminding us, focus on behavior, guys. Don't fall into the psychological trap. Don't try to figure out why. Don't try to win them over. Your job is not to win everyone over. And this is what bothers me about people who say, I want to win the hearts and minds. Your job is not to win people over if that person discovers that they can take up a lot of your time being won over. That's not the job of a manager. It'd be great if we could all snap our fingers and win people over, but that's not the way it works. And if somebody wants to actively resist being won over, you're never going to win them over. And every minute you spend doing that, and frankly, that means trying to figure out why they are the way they are, you're going to be probably ineffective, and you're certainly not going to be getting any other work done, because you can only do one thing at a time. So you don't need to convert them. Too many managers think that getting to the why is a way to convert them. It's a bad idea. You can't do it. Classic mistake. Let's engage them in a different way. Don't do it. You're not an expert. You can't believe everything a subordinate is going to tell you about why they feel the way they do if you're arguing about their state of mind, because they are the sole proprietor of their state of mind. And they can fib to you in order to put you on the wrong track and then come up with another reason. And you're basically saying to them, your state of mind is important enough for me that I'm going to attempt to change it. And if they're playing these kind of games with you, it's their mind is not worth changing. And look, I'm going to say it. Some people will argue with me about this. You really don't need everybody's hearts and minds on board with you to achieve results. You need their behavior. Now, obviously, we want behavior, and we want attitude, and we want people, you know, who just feel great about it. But if you had a choice between somebody's heart and mind without behavior, because if somebody's going to jerk you around on heart and mind, they're going to jerk you around on behavior too. What they'll do is say, yeah, okay, I'm on board. But then when they start working, they'll prove by their behavior they're not on board. But now you'd be calling them a liar to say they're not on board, because they just told you they were.
Well, to me, that's the problem with focusing on what they're thinking, is you can't see it. You can't know. All you can know is what they tell you. And if you don't believe them, if they're playing games, you can't believe them in the first place.
And what's worse, they'll say, oh, well, I'm on board. But then they don't behave like it.
And then what do you do? Tell them you're lying?
Yeah. I don't want a guy who's on board who doesn't behave like he's on board. I'd rather have a guy who says, I'm not on board, and who behaves. Right. And that's the problem with folks who are willing to unprofessionally, silently plot against a professional ethical manager at any level. Look, we've come to realize that the time and skills necessary to get individuals bought into everything is just astronomical. The thought experiment that I just suggested is, if you had the hearts and minds without the behavior, is that what you'd want? I would say not. What we recommend is focusing on behavior. And what we've learned is that many silent plotters, many naysayers, many dominators can actually behave their way into believing what you'd like them to believe. And even if they don't, you still get their behavior. Now, what we've done in the other casts is, before we got to our specific recommendations, we addressed what the journal said that people said in the article, because often they interview somebody who gives a vague non-answer. It really ticks me off.
Oh, actually, in this case, so you actually like the recommendation?
Yeah, a corporate trainer recommended calling on silent plotters in the meeting.
Oh, I like
that. That's the only recommendation they proffered, but I got to say, I like that. That's absolutely something we recommend. I've done this many times. It works great. And basically, the silent plotter has a choice to make. Is he or she going to come clean and admit, yeah, I'm over here silently plotting against you? Or they say, no, I'm on board. In which case, if they say they're on board, it makes it much harder for them to behave if you'll pardon the expression, disobediently later.
Their plotting's out of the bag, right? They made a public statement.
Yeah, or it gives you more leverage when you go to them and say, when you don't behave in the right way, after you told me you were on board, it makes me believe that you're really not on board. Which is it? And people start squirming when they realize they have to repeat a lie again. So it was a good recommendation. Here's what we recommend, though. Let's get right to it. The first thing is, no-brainer, set a ground rule in all your meetings, whether it's a project meeting or your staff meeting, whatever, of participation or interaction. For the meetings that you run, set a ground rule that says everyone should interact. We recommend interaction. We want you to participate. Ground rules help people understand what the cultural norm is of your microculture that you have there as a manager. And we've said this before about meeting ground rules. They act like a silent sergeant at arms at a meeting. You as meeting leader will have to do less facilitation and spend less time on the process of running the meeting if you get ground rules agreed to up front. And of course, there's a cast for both ground rules, the facilitating ground rules, and for meetings, one of which includes the meeting cast. One of the items in is set ground rules. And so we recommend you have a ground rule of participation. And what happens is when somebody's not talking, you can point to them and say, hey, interact, participate. What do you think? And because everyone's already agreed to it, because you're not perceived as picking on them. In fact, if you don't have the ground rule, you'll get more pushback of you're picking on me. If you have the ground rule, when you say, okay, Bob, go ahead and participate. What do you think? And look, I remember one guy very clearly. I wasn't a manager there. I was a consultant, but I took him aside later. And an executive said, what do you think, Bob? And he says, well, it's too early for me to have an opinion. I took him aside and said, hey, can I give you some feedback? And he said, sure. I said, when you don't have an opinion, when you're a senior manager, it comes across as blatantly political. And frankly, look, the VP hired me. I'm going to tell him you're not on board. If you're on board, you better go talk to him because I'm about to tell him you're not. That's unprofessional. And he was just stunned. I said, look, you don't think we're stupid here. We're not stupid. We know what you're doing. It's too early to have an opinion. We have to make a decision this afternoon. Are you the only one who's clever enough and wise enough to know that any decision made on the limited amount of data is going to be inherently wrong? So ground rules make it easier for you to call on a suspected silent plotter, period.
And do you find that some folks, they're not necessarily trying to be a silent plotter, but they're reluctant to participate, so they don't say much. And then they feel cut out of the conversation. The conversation, you go 45 minutes into it, they haven't participated. The people are vocalizing ideas they don't necessarily support. Because they're unwilling to participate, then they start to feel shut out. And then they start engaging in negative behaviors after the meeting.
I guess my answer to that is, I know people will hate me for saying this, but honestly, I don't care.
Yeah,
I don't care that they feel shut out. They're an adult. Whether there's a ground rule or not, they know they have a chance to participate. Now, this certainly isn't true if a manager blasts people every time they disagree with him, his or her ideas. But if a manager is generally professional and asks for input and somebody doesn't, and then because they feel shut out after a manager calls on them and there's a ground rule about it, or even if you don't, if they had a chance to talk and they didn't take advantage of it, the idea that that somehow justifies them working against me, I don't care what their justification is. If they're working against me, that's not effective. I don't care if a sales rep, you know, other than if he's got serious family issues that we're working on, something like that. If a sales rep says, well, I'm not sure I agree with this pitch we're doing. I'm sorry. I don't care whether it's that or whether you disagree with the company or you don't like our values. While you're here, you have to achieve results. That's the first rule. So I don't really care.
Yeah. My point was, I knew what your answer would be around the caring. My point was that sometimes by setting the ground rules, and we're gonna get ready here shortly to talk about asking for input, by setting the ground rules and getting them to participate, it breaks the ice a little bit, and then they become more willing participants, and a lot of that negative behavior goes away just as a result of having the ground rules and requiring participation up front.
Yeah, I think that's true. I don't think the other is true, though, necessarily, that they feel shut out. And if they do feel shut out when we've engaged in good behavior, we're not responsible for how they feel. We're not.
Good point.
Okay, so, and the second thing we recommend is asking for input. Calling on them reduces the chances that they're going to create problems now or later. Now, to be clear, there are subtle reasons for this. We're also not really worried about what they're going to say. we don't ask for their input just to have them publicly have to choose to publicly disagree, because they're probably not going to do that. Asking for input, as you said, definitely does increase the chances that they'll go along. But if they have a problem with what you're doing, it's better to hear it in the meeting and have a chance for others to support your point of view, or to have an argument, if it's going to be that, between two people who work for you rather than between you and the silent plotter, which then elevates him to your level. If you have a known silent plotter and you think he or she's going to be in a certain meeting, if they're going to stand up and fight when you ask for input, enlist one or two of your best directs in the campaign to reduce that plotter's impact. Tell your directs in advance. Ask them to speak up and disagree, even debate a little with the plotter, so it's not just you versus the plotter. Coming from someone else makes it harder for the plotter to feel that he or she is actually doing what they want to do, which is thwart progress, right? Standing astride the railroad tracks to progress, I think. And by the way, this works in both a team or in a project meeting. Now, look, some of the plotters will find themselves caving in and agreeing. If they do, and then they revert to form after the meeting, which that happens a lot, they feel obligated to admit, yeah, it's fine. And then they go back and then they realize, I didn't like the fact that he called on me, and I'm still going to be who I want to be, which is I just disagree in this particular case. It's much better to be able to remind them that they agreed in the meeting. And if they've publicly agreed in the meeting, even if they felt a little coerced by the fact that you engage in a standard professional meeting behavioral ground rule, which is please participate and interact, they are less likely to act out their disagreements afterwards. I mean, they are, just because they know they agree. But does it reduce the chances that if they say it out loud, that then they're suddenly going to be less of a problem? I don't think so. And again, team or project meeting doesn't matter. Now, a project meeting, you have less power, and that's where the ground rules become even more important. Yeah, so ask for input every single time. Let me take that back. Have the ground rule. Make asking for input standard. Don't only ask for them, ask for other people as well. That's what I mean by every time. Ask as many people as you can and include the silent plotter, particularly when you think he or she is going to try to pull you off track later afterwards. And look, Mike, if you were my boss and I was silent plotting, what I would tell you to do is, if I didn't speak up and then I started working against you, or if I did speak up and I started working against you, you'd come to me and say, look, when you say you're going to support the plan and then you don't, it's a question of ethics. And when you don't support the plan after you've said you would, it comes across as unprofessional. And that takes us right into feedback.
Yeah. So let's talk about feedback, because it's absolutely unethical, right? And there's nowhere to run at that point. And they know it. My experience is that 95%, yeah. I mean, they absolutely know it. So let's talk about people doing those kind of things and the idea of giving feedback. I mean, is it okay to give feedback?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, folks, that's a softball. Yeah, I know, it's okay to give feedback.
Yeah, you don't have to. But to be clear, I thought you were asking about not in the meeting, right? Of course, you don't do it in the meeting. Okay. And guys, you don't call a silent plotter out in a meeting, because if he or she is being silent, all you're going to do is cause him to sit there quietly and stare at you.
Yeah, good
point. Then your behavior is going to be the one that's really, really unusual. So if one of your directs says nothing, whether called on or not in a meeting, especially in a meeting where interaction or participation is a ground rule, obviously, you can give feedback.
And folks, this is regardless of whether they're a silent plotter or not.
Exactly.
This is just as professional behavior when you're participating in a meeting, is to actually participate.
Right. Yeah. So what you would say is, in a one-on-one later, or walking out of the meeting in 5 minutes, or when you see them in the hallway 2 hours later, you say, hey, can I give some feedback? When you don't speak up about a process that involves you, you come across to me as disengaged. Can you do something about that? Oh, I'm engaged. I didn't say you weren't engaged. I asked you, can you change that? Well, I'm not sure I want to change it. Well, we'll talk about this later then. And of course, that shot across the bow and you walk away. And when they say, well, I am engaged, say, well, again, that's not what I was asking. Can you change your behavior? Because it's perceived that you're not engaged. Well, those people are wrong. Well, we'll talk about it later. And then, of course, if they continue to do that, if they stonewall you, then you say, when you repeatedly fail to commit to new behavior after I give you negative feedback, it comes across as rude, and it makes me question whether or not you're on board, and it makes me pay more attention to the output that you're producing for the team. Can you do something about that? Here's another one. When you don't share your opinions about our new work plan, you lose an opportunity to create better outcomes and we don't benefit from your input. Can you do something about that? Or can I give some feedback? When you roll your eyes when I'm saying I really believe in something, it's unprofessional and it tears down the team. Can you stop doing that for me, please? I mean, it's not hard. And it's best to be delivered as simply and as quietly and as politely as possible. They know they've been caught. Most managers won't do anything about them because the manager says, well, they're not doing anything, so it's not a problem. Well, look, if they're silent in a meeting, but then they produce results, I still want them to produce a result, which is to say interaction in the meeting. But if they're silent in the meeting, and even if they produce good results, they're working against you, that's unacceptable. And you've got to get, you can give them positive feedback about achieving results, and you can give them negative feedback about tearing down the team by talking negatively about the team's obligations and its responsibilities.
If you're the manager, what I found is a person rarely is coming up to you as a manager and disparaging the team or disparaging you, right? That most of the time, the silent plotter, what they do is they go out, they go to other members of the team behind your back or behind the project manager's back and tear down the team that way. So often it's third-party feedback as a manager.
And we won't go into third-party feedback in a great deal of detail here in this cast, but there is a cast for that, guys. And the simple fact is if Mike and Mark work together and we both report to Joe and Mike notices me tearing down the team, I tear down the team to Mike. Mike goes to Joe and says, hey, this boss, I don't want to tattle on Mark or anything, but you need to know Mark's sitting over there bitching about X and Y and Z again. And Joe would probably say to Mike, if he's smart, he'd say, okay, you say he's bitching. What did he actually do? Well, he came over to me and said, I can't believe anybody thinks this will work. And of course, Joe writes that down. This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And then Joe writes that down and he says, okay, thanks, Mike. And then Joe has to make a call. Do I trust Mike? Do I believe this to be true? If he doesn't believe it, if he doesn't trust Mike, if he's not certain it happened, he doesn't deliver it. If he believes it, he trusts Mike. He delivers it as if Joe saw it himself. And so Joe would come to me and say, Mark, can I give some feedback? I said, sure, boss. He says, when you say this will never work and this is the stupidest thing ever, it comes across as really unprofessional. And it's tearing down the team and it's something I have no tolerance for. Can we change that?
Yeah, you were in that meeting. Who told you that?
Well, what's important is I'm telling you.
Nope.
Yeah, that's the line. Everybody loves that line at conferences. That's the third party feedback line. Yeah, doesn't matter who said it to me. I believe it. And then if I were to say back to Joe, well, it's not true. Joe would say, okay, then it's no worries for us. Sorry, I apologize. And one of two things is true, right, guys? Either I did it or I didn't. If I did it, Joe can walk away because he just gave me a shot across the bow. If I didn't do it, Joe's walked away and apologized. And if Joe believes Mike a lot and Mark always pushes back, Joe has to make a call about whether or not Mike is telling the truth or whether Mark is just blustering. And now look, if you're going to do this in a project meeting, it's very possible you'd have to give the peer feedback model. There's a cast for that. You eliminate step one and step four, and it would sound something like this. Hey, if Mike and I are on a project team and I'm the project lead, but we're peers in the formal structural part of the organization, then I would say, hey, Mike, I don't know if you know it, but when you say what you said, blah, 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 about the project, I think it takes away from the project. I just wanted you to know that. You don't start with step one. You don't start with step four. You just use steps two and three. And all you're doing is sharing a point of view with a peer.
And by the way, if you go to your boss with third-party feedback, you want to share what Tom or Joe did with your boss, it's very likely your boss is good. Your boss is going to ask you, well, did you share that with Joe directly?
Yeah. And if you didn't, it's very possible that you'll be perceived as somebody who needs the boss to fight their battles for them. Now, look, we also, when it comes to project team guys, we stand by our earlier guidance to giving feedback to a more senior person than you, who is nevertheless a project team member of yours, is a bad idea. But ground rules help. And, you know, being careful, there are times when in the right situation, you could, in fact, use the peer feedback model. But I would use it very, very carefully, very rarely in situations like that. And that's what you do. Set ground rules, call for interaction. And give feedback, private feedback in a polite tone of voice. And they won't get very far. They'll discover very quickly that you know what they're doing. And yes, you can mandate, because you're willing to give feedback about professional behavior in meetings, even the lack of behavior, which is a form of behavior in and of itself. Simple.
All right, my friend. Thank you.
You bet, partner.
All right. We'll see you. Thanks, everyone. That's it. Hope you enjoyed it and hope to see you back here again next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.